which is Vayakel, Parshat Tashavua, referring to the reading that will take place this coming Shabbat. And consequently, from the understanding of the sages, that each week's parsha, beginning with Sunday, is a teaching and also a protection for specific events that should be occurring during this week. In other words, they had calculated thousands of years ago that each week and each week of the year, which a section of the Torah is read, that particular section deals with events that will unfold, whether we observe it, whether we don't, that deal with that particular, this particular week. And therefore, this week is Vayakel. Now, Vayakel, I'd like to just translate from the English. And it says, "And Moses assembled all the congregation of the children of Israel and said unto them, these are the words which the Lord hath commanded that you should do to them." And from this verse, the sages arrived at a conclusion, strange as it may seem, that the word Vayakel means assemble. In other words, it's one of the 613 precepts, just like there is a precept, thou shalt not kill. There is a precept of assemblage. And in fact, there are in many times during history, the word would go out from the sages, let us fulfill the precept of Hakel. Only recently, about 2 or 3 years ago, the movement of Lubavitch came out that this year would be the year of congregation, assemblage, meaning getting together, which is what it appears to be, the idea behind gathering all together. In other words, where people are separated in their own particular homes, etc. And therefore, from this word, Vayakel, emerged one of the precepts. In other words, the idea of unity, getting together, etc., which would become within Judaism an important feature of how to create unity. And from that, many other ideas have emerged. However, strange as it may seem, the Zohar goes on to another track of and trend of thought completely. So astonishing that it might almost provide us with the opposite conclusion of that which has been normally assumed. And the Zohar goes on to say, "Vayakel Moshe, Hakel et ha'am hanashim v'nashim v'ataf, gather amongst you the entire nation, man, women, children. Ma lahala hu klal shel kol Yisrael, afkan ha klal shel kol Yisrael, mihem shishim ribo." This particular precept, as we shall address it this morning, refers to even little children. Now, if the idea is to gather together and create unity, of course, there is something as a family that stays together or prays together, stays together, all of these ideas. But this is referring even to little children were involved in this particular precept. Now, little children, if they're 1 year, 1 day old, 2 days old, how do they contribute to the unity? If anything, they may even start bursting out with tears, etc. And why would this be considered? And the Zohar stresses the idea that it also includes children. And then the Zohar turns around and goes on to a very voluminous writing on this particular section. A section that almost has nothing to do with the idea of assemblage. And concludes the Zohar, with many prescriptions that the idea of Vayakhel, unity, is not what the word here implied, but rather, because this world is fragmented, and the Zohar touches the root and origin for its fragmentation, is because, contrary to many spiritual teachings, where the idea of good and evil, should be brought together, and that evil be transformed, that evil be controlled. Zohar says there is an aspect of evil that must be eliminated. Because this idea of evil is similar to darkness. They do not coexist. You walk into an unlit auditorium, you strike a match, the darkness disappears. It does not coexist somehow with the light. And that's a clear demonstration that there is an aspect in this universe, referred to as darkness, which does not and cannot coexist with light. Light, indicative of or representing the idea of unity, representing something which is good, because light is what we all desire. It can only, like the light of the sun, can only provide us with sustenance and nourishment. And because of that, and following on the heels of last week's reading of the golden calf incident, whereby we learned that there is a segment of people in the world referred to as Erev Rav, evil people that have no other function but to create chaos and disorder in the universe. That's their function. And ultimately, they must be removed. No less than if you want to have a room that's completely lit, that darkness must of necessity leave the room. And you bear in mind and recall constantly the idea that darkness, which is the absence of light, Now, again, from the Zohar point of view, the absence of light can also be construed as, well, it just doesn't have light. Is it a force by and within itself? From the Zohar point of view, it is that distinct force that creates havoc. And it is not by chance that when today in modern medicine we take an X-ray, the idea that provides the physician or researcher with an inkling that something is wrong is the idea that on that film appears a dark spot. What does that indicate? The absence of light? No, something more serious. It indicates a malady, an ailment. It's a force that is creating havoc within our system. So the Zohar, without X-rays and modern technology, has already come to the conclusion that the idea of darkness is not only a question of the absence of light, but it is a very strong negative force in this world that must be overcome. And therefore, concludes the Zohar, that Vayakhel, referred to here, following the incident of the golden calf, Vayakhel, and he gathered, meaning, almost meaning, as if he separated now, separated the Erev Rav, separated the Erev Rav, this disease, and what is disease? Just what the word means, dis-ease, the opposite of light, dis-ease. It creates a function which is contrary to balance, to ease. That's why, without knowing, we attribute a malfunction in the system or in the universe as a dis-ease. It is not a question of the absence of light, but a very strong force that creates havoc individually, personally, and as well in the world, says the Zohar. Consequently, the Vayakhel is a concealed expression of how we can separate, how we can gather the forces of good and separate from the forces of evil. So this entire section is providing us with an element and an understanding of how, if we want to deal with the removal of chaos and disorder in our lives, it originates with the idea of assembling. Assembling what? And in brief, the Zohar goes on to a very lengthy discussion on assembling all of the material, all of the forces that can create assembly, again, meaning unity, to create a unified structure, and supporting that unified structure as to prevent outside forces known as dis-ease or Erev Rav, as it is also referred to, Erev Rav referring to people. But all of these forces that we may have no idea of its existence, forces that forever will remain metaphysical, as the Zohar will shortly explain, remains metaphysical. And never shall we ever achieve a detection device that can determine the presence of this evil inclination, of this evil force that lurks around us, and we have no idea, and little by little, it eats away, until suddenly, on a screen, on an x-ray, appears the result of this metaphysical force. Therefore, follows the Zohar in the beginning of this parsha, Ki bizman shenimsaim reshaim elu, and as long as these, he's referring now to the Erev Rav, as long as these evil people remain within your midst, Hachasidim v'hatzadikim hanimsaim b'neihem nitfasim ba'avonam, as long as you have within your midst, says the Zohar, these evil people, the Shayim as they're referred to, the righteous, the pious, will be caught up and fall victim to the onslaught of these evil forces. Referring right now to people. And continues the Zohar, Lule oto ha'erev rav, and had this Erev Rav, these evil people, shenitchabru b'Yisrael, that became connected, became one congregation. Lo haya nenshim Yisrael al cheta egel. Had they not somehow managed to cling to the rest of the children of Israel, then what had originally been the intent of revelation on Mount Sinai, the end of chaos, the end of death, the end of destruction, would have become a real reality. Only because they were present, the fact of their presence, and that these righteous people, even if they are pious people, cannot escape the clutches of the heir of Rab. And therefore, when the Torah says, Vayakel Moshe, and Moshe gathered the people, gathering indicating he united them, unity can only come about with the absence not of light, but the absence of darkness. Darkness cannot participate. Darkness cannot become or coexist together with an entity that seeks unity, seeks happiness, seeks health, seeks financial stability, etc. This section, this entire section that will be read on in this Parsha Vayakel, is dealing with what? The construction of the temple, of the tabernacle in the wilderness. As prior to their entrance into Israel, they would have the tabernacle as their security shield. And here, says the Zohar, the process of Vayakel, the knowledge, the consciousness that they must divorce themselves from evil people, it is not a question of eliminating. We are not discussing eliminating, but being conscious that I must separate. I must beware. I must put up almost like a wall, a curtain, separating myself. And the Zohar will give us some of the methodology. But that there must be an act of consciousness at all times that if somehow around me lurks an evil force, that I must be conscious and proceed to create Vayakel unity. But unity is not a combination of good and evil, but rather the separation. So the word Vayakel seems to emerge from the Zohar as something entirely different. And the reason for this occasion of Vayakel following the incident of the golden calf is because in Parshat Truma, going back several sections, there again, as in this week's Parsha section, the Jews are asked to contribute money for the tabernacle. But they had already contributed several weeks ago. But there, says the Zohar and all of the other commentators, there all the money that had been assembled from all of the people, including the heir of Rab. And consequently teaches us the Zohar that if the tabernacle, which was to represent the security shield, which is what a synagogue is supposed to represent, where you draw and tap the energy forces by which you can create separation from evil forces that constantly lurk and make an attempt to penetrate our inner sanctum, whatever that may be. It might be a business. It might be social relationships. The idea of the black cat. Where does it come from? That's what happened. And therefore, the relationships are no longer the same as they were before. Why? because there are forces. And so this tabernacle is meant to represent a security shield by which Vayakel, the same time separating, and because the separation from evil, from darkness takes place, consequently, there will be the result of Vayakel, unity. But unity means a healthy body. Unity means a successful business. Unity means a wonderful relationship, family relationship. That is unity. But not the idea that we can afford the luxury of permitting evil, darkness, to enter into our own domain. And consequently, we believe we shall be able to overcome, we shall be able to transform, says the Zohar. That is not the position of the Zohar, of Kabbalah, nor is it the practical remedy by which one can create unity, harmony in his midst. And therefore, when they were told again to assemble and contribute towards the tabernacle, says the Zohar, as I mentioned, all other commentators, the intermingling of the money from the Erev Rav, from these evil people, together with the rest of the children of Israel, did not occur this time. To lead us again to believe that this contribution, the contribution that was being made, something of an inanimate nature, supposedly, again teaches us the Zohar that there is no such thing. Today we know that. In 20th century physics, we're aware of the idea that there is no such thing as inorganic or inanimate. Everything is alive. Everything has a consciousness. A table has a consciousness. A chair has a consciousness. There isn't anything that does not impress or influence our consciousness. You go into a restaurant. If you don't know how to read the table, if you don't know who sat there just prior to your seat being seated, and if there were evil people, if there were evil people in that restaurant, prior to your being seated at that table, and you can't read, you can't feel the vibrations. Ignorance, my friend, of the law is no excuse. You cannot enjoy that meal, and you may never know why. I just didn't enjoy the food or didn't enjoy the atmosphere, and we have no idea as to why that happens. The fact that we have no idea does not excuse the incident from taking place. Everything, and including money, the contributions that the children of Israel were making towards the tabernacle to create an environment that could protect them, because the tabernacle was structured taking all of the positive forces of the light force of God and bringing them into fruition, into a manifested state. They would now act as Vayakel. They would now act. All of the forces would now combine into one unified edifice known as the tabernacle. And then, at that point, having eliminated, having separated the money of the heir of Rav, eliminate, separate, that is the result of Vayakel. That brings about unity. And when there is unity, when there is just the presence of the light force, you have every form and means of security that is necessary for our well-being. And that is the purpose of Vayakel. And therefore, this parsha, which seems almost nothing, well, I shouldn't even say almost nothing. In fact, has nothing to do with the structure and construction of the tabernacle. If you, at your leisure, wish to peruse this particular section, you will see it deals primarily and solely with the idea of how the tabernacle was built. Different dimensions, etc. curtains, and whatever. However, this is merely a repetition, and many sages ask that question. This section is an exact duplicate of Parshat Truma. There. How to structure the ark, how to structure the other aspects of what constitutes the tabernacle, the walls, the curtains, the separations between the Holy of Holies and otherwise, the altar, the candelabra, all of these dimensions, the method of how this was to be structured, are all contained in Parshat Truma, in another section. This is an exact repetition. And many sages remain with the question as to why are the dimensions repeated again when all we have to do is refer back to Parshat Truma. And the answer is, but there is one difference. There is one dimension that was different in this Parsha that was contained. Does that make the difference? That makes all of the difference. Externally, the physical matter, science tells us, represents 1%. The physical body takes up space of only 1%. The rest are atoms. The rest is what some refer to as empty space. The physicality only makes things become manifest. They only represent 1%. They are the aesthetics of how it looks, etc., represents 1%. Therefore, the temple, the tabernacle, in this week's Parsha, is completely different than the other. In this week's Parsha, goes on the Zohar, to provide us with a methodology by which we can be aware, which we can be conscious of forces, unseen forces, like cancer. Is it a force that only appears in an X-ray? Any other illness, ailment, is it something that emerges when it hits? Or has it been brewing maybe for 20 and 30 years before? And the answer is, of course, AIDS doesn't begin the day that the testing indicates the presence of AIDS. It happened 20 and 30 years ago. What do you do about that? Unfortunately, there are no detection devices that can assist us in detecting these particular metaphysical, at that state, I should say, metaphysical forces of destruction. What do you do? What do you do? You have to wait, and as I have repeatedly said, either be from the lucky ones or the unlucky ones. Is that the idea of the initial intent of the light force of God? Is to permit us just to fend for ourselves without any support? Therefore, concludes the Zohar. Everything mentioned in this section and the reading itself on Shabbat will be for the sole purpose of Vayakel, to create unity. And that unity is not a coexistence of good and evil as one unified whole, but it is a force. This Parsha is a force by which we can separate, even if it be cancer, or it be cancer in our lives, cancer in our business, cancer denoting the idea of something that is destructive. How do you remove it? People sometimes we find easy to eliminate. Sometimes we have difficulty in eliminating what we consider to be a cancer to a relationship. This week's Parsha, the reading from the Torah, unfortunately we're not aware of it. We think and assume That's something like radiation. Radiation can eliminate a disease like cancer. But we have found out, to our dismay and our sorrow, that that does not differentiate between good and evil. Unfortunately, the effects of therapy, and the discussion of whether we approve or disapprove of therapy provided today is not the discussion, is not within the confines of our discussion this morning. But this Vayakhel, this reading of the Torah, provides us with that support system. That was the purpose of an original intent of a to God. This was meant to be a security shield, as it is rightfully known as the Magen David. And therefore, the Magen David, meaning Star of David, but it's not the Star of David. The word Magen David means what it should have always meant. Magen meaning security. Security. The security of David. What does that mean? Security of David. Does he secure people? How do we enlist the support of David, who died about 2,800 years ago, to support us now in our daily problems and eliminate, remove some of the chaos in our lives? No. When they were asked to contribute, the consciousness that would go into that contribution was what would determine whether the tabernacle would, in effect, be a place of support or not. If the temple or if the synagogue cannot support itself, what does that mean? And we have seen down through the ages, synagogues are destroyed, burnt. One night in 1939, a night became infamous as Crystal Night. That same place, that same tabernacle, which was intended to support and provide security for its members, could not even support itself. The same with the Torah today. Many, many synagogues around the world, they place bars. There are some synagogues even that have now safes because they fear the stealing of a Torah. I say, if the Torah cannot protect itself, how in the world do I expect it to preserve me if it cannot do that same job for itself? Because we have lost the idea of what the tabernacle is about. We have lost the idea of what the Torah. We have now placed it as a museum piece, and because it's holy or because it's an antique, losing sight of what the Zohar is trying to impress us with, and that this, as in the case of the tabernacle, was intended to be a security shield, a protection by which we could remove chaos and devastation. Well, who would think and who does think that we should assemble here in this synagogue, this Shabbat, because by reading, according to the Zohar, by reading and listening to these words make manifest the security shield of the tabernacle. Does it have to be here? No, it can be anywhere. Well, why do we need the tabernacle? Why do we need such a place? Can it be done at home? The answer is yes. Then why go to the expense of building these beautiful modern edifices that can run who knows how much money? When if the purpose is to protect the individual, but I think that's been lost. It is not meant any longer, in my opinion, for the individual security, but rather as a monument for displaying, if one is Jewish, displaying his Jewishness or whatever, because I see no other reason. However, says the Zohar, as it is stated in Vayikra, that there is no such thing as inanimate, that these walls have ears. These walls have consciousness. And if these walls are present during the reading, let's say this Shabbat, it preserves the energy that has become manifested by its reading, the energy of separating cancer from the body, as literal as that. Separating cancer from the body. And with all of the other manifested states of the light force that take place each and every single day if there are prayers going on. These walls have captured that manifested state of energy. That's what this tabernacle is all about. That's why an entire section is brought to the forefront so that we can take advantage. If that be the case, if these walls indeed have made manifest the light force of God. In this week's section, the Zohar discusses the secrets of the Torah. The secrets of the Torah. Why is there a Torah in a synagogue? Well, it wouldn't be a synagogue without a Torah. But that's not the answer to the question. Why is it there? Because, ostensibly, when the Torah is read, the light force, like the match in a dark room, the light force that becomes revealed through an instrument known as the Torah, the ark. What is the significance of the ark? We have discussed that on a previous occasion. Why do you need an ark? Just cover it. You need a place where to put it. Says the Zohar, why do you need the ark? For the same reason that Noah needed an ark for his security. And if we delve into the idea of the flood, the deluge, for a moment, the description of the flood, the manner in which it was brought upon civilization at that time, that little ark could never survive. The upheaval that took place during that time. And there he is, Noah and this little ark, surviving. Says the Zohar, of course, the idea of an ark to save Noah was not the intent. First of all, the Zohar even raises the question, God couldn't save, if he was going to save Noah, he couldn't save him any other way. And the other way, must it be through the ark? Let him place him somewhere up above the clouds. I mean, after all, it's God. He can do anything. Let him just pick him up, place him on a red carpet on top of the clouds, and he'll survive. Certainly the ark was not, I mean, the Titanic couldn't even survive, right? Why would this little ark made of wood survive? I mean, this iceberg business with the Titanic was so miniature compared to the upheaval that was contained in the idea of flood. It wasn't just flood. It was fire, brimstone, hail, you name it. It was everything. And there he is in this little ark, surviving. Says the Zohar, and I want to read that section to you. At the reason for the ark was so that there would be a physical manifested separation between the outside forces of destruction and Noah. Another section. Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, Elazar b'ni, my son Elazar, atah v'hachavirim ishtiru atzmechem eilu gimel yamim shelo teitzu l'chutz. Rabbi Shimon is telling his son, Rabbi Elazar, who was a tzaddik, a righteous person in his own right, that you and all of the companions remain concealed within the house for 3 days. Mishum shemalach hamavet nimtza ba'ir, because the angel of death has made his appearance in our city. V'yesh lo reshut l'chabel, and he has been given the permission to destroy. U'kevi shenitna reshut l'mashchit yochol l'ashchit kol mi shenira lefanav. Because if you appear outside, there is no separation between you and that evil disease outside. The angel of death doesn't only come in forms of the pictures that are portrayed as the angel of death. It comes in forms of disease. It comes in forms of depression, of recession, whatever it might be. We are taught by the Zohar that to separate requires a physical separation. Now, no one other than Rabbi Shimon could have detected the angel of death or chaos as a force. This darkness is not just the absence of light, but rather the Zohar is impressing us with the idea that this force, the opposite of light, if it is not contained, or you are not contained, then has permission to create havoc to anyone and anything within its confines. And therefore the necessity of an ark. The ark was not there solely for the purpose of creating a boat by which Noah would be saved. But no, because the force of evil, the force of destruction, which was represented and manifested by a flood, by hail and brimstone, and all other destructive forces that took place, was a positive, when I say positive, I don't mean, was an active destructive force. That if we do not protect ourselves from that force, then we become vulnerable and we become susceptible to all of the effects of this devastating force. Another idea, all within this section, only for me to lead you into the conclusion of the Zohar. That what this section is talking about is not just the simple construction of an ark, but everything contained here is the secrets of the security shields that we have available by knowledge, by the Zohar, in which if we follow these rules, can avoid chaos within our own lives. When things strike suddenly, there is no such thing as no forewarning. Every instrument that is utilized by the evil force of destruction can be prevented, and that in every situation, that when it suddenly strikes, at least the Zohar wants to forewarn us that there is no such thing as a sudden strike of the Dark Lord's force. There are always warnings. There are always preventive measures that can be taken, provided familiar with those preventive measures. A little incident, which I'm sure touches all of us at one time or another. Amar Rabbi Shimon, and this is a very practical demonstration, vulnerable to all forms of illness, to all forms of death, when they shouldn't have occurred in the first place. And yet our consciousness is one of such an act of God. But as we know in Kabbalah, and as we have learned in Kabbalah, the true essence of God has never been and never will be one of destruction. There is no such thing as the hand of God in chaos, in devastation. We have only come to under the religious cloak, of the inability to read, the hand of God. So we say, well, it's the hand of God. There's nothing that we can do to prevent the evil hand of God. And from the Zohar point of view, there is no such thing as the evil hand of God. That evil form of destruction that we are discussing this morning, that force is not contained within God. Vayakel. There is a force that lurks and exists in this universe. However, we have not been thrust to the wolves to fend for ourselves. Says Rabbi Shimon, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Shirov b'nei olam einem meitim lefnei zmanim chutz me'elu she'eino yodim lishmot et atzmam. There are many people who are cut off from their lives, early ages, before their time, says the Zohar, only because they do not know. They're not familiar with the rules on how to protect themselves. Death? Havoc is something that we can learn how to prevent that chaos from happening in our lives? Have you ever heard that before? That's what Rabbi Shimon says. When it strikes, it strikes. It strikes the unlucky and doesn't strike the lucky ones. Says Rabbi Shimon clearly, there is no such animal. Maybe lucky if you're in the wrong place at the right time. Yes. But what happens when you have no choice but to be at the wrong place at the right time? What does that mean? We have all attended, unfortunately, a funeral. And many times, not only do we leave the chapel, but we continue on to the cemetery. Something is harmless, to pay our last respects. Nothing wrong with that. And this is in this week's parsha, because Vayakel, the purpose of this parsha is to demonstrate on how one can create unity, which is security. If there is no coexistence with the Dark Lord, then there is unity. Nothing can then take place of a negative nature. And when they take the departed one from his house to the cemetery, Nimsa Malach HaMavet Ben HaNashim. As awful as it may sound, but it says that the angel of death, and as we said before, This is a force. It is a force, the same force that drives cancer, the same force that creates a disease in marital relationships or in a business. This force is known as Malach HaMavet, the angel of death, a force. At the time of a funeral, this force is found amongst women. He lurks around women. Sounds awful, but just bear with me. Lama nimtsa bein anashim, because the Zohar is not merely chauvinistic. He also raises the question. Why is it so? Why does the angel of death lurk amongst women? Shekahu darko mishum shepita et chava. If you remember, the snake, which is the symbol of the angel of death, convinced Eve to eat from the apple. You remember? Ubishvila garem hamavet lekol olam. And what was the result of Eve eating of the apple? Where death was not a familiar sight at that time in existence. From that moment on, when she ate, meaning she connected with the consciousness of the tree of knowledge, good and evil, because she was influenced by the snake. Al kein hu meimet adam vagvarim nimtzaim imamet nichnas bein anashim baderech habeit hakvarot. But the women, being connected as Eve, made this connection. It was Eve that made this connection. Why do we have the story of Eve, the snake, the tree of life, tree of knowledge? Why? Merely to tell us a story? No. Did Eve die? No. But Eve yet made the connection with the angel of death, the snake. Did she die? No, says the Zohar, because at that moment, she was instilled with an immune system that would prevent the snake, the angel of death, from striking down women. They could go on a cemetery where that is the abode, obviously the habitat of the angel of death, because that's his business. He's like a funeral director. Unfortunately, the funeral director, he directs the funeral, but the angel of death, he kind of provides the business. And when these women are found together with that connection that once was established, they have an immune system. And it is not by coincidence as to why women live longer than men. That's been an old statistic. Women generally outlive men. Why? I know I can give you at least 2 million different theories, one opposing the other, but none of them sound very logical. But here the Zohar is providing us with a piece of information. On Vayakel, how can we separate? How can we become immune to the forces that are lurking all around us? Because of this, Yesh lo reshut lehimid bnei adam v'hu mistakel bifneihem shel hanirim lefanav v'derech lebeit hakvarot. And when they take the departed, the deceased, out to the cemetery, if the men connect visually to the eyes of the women on a cemetery, they have, unfortunately, connected to the disease called Malach HaMavet, the angel of death. Those are beautiful terms. We're talking about a force of death. By virtue of connecting, and since they do not and were not instilled with the immune system against this angel of death before the time, because the length of years is fixed, it should be 120. We should all live until 120. Only because, says the Zohar, we have become vulnerable to this force that exists, surrounds us daily in our lives, and because we haven't the information by which we can prevent their clutches from becoming connected with us. And so therefore, males being accompanied by women, where there's nothing wrong with that, although it is an old Arab tradition, Muslim tradition, and an old Sephardic tradition, not today anymore, where women would never go to the cemetery. But no one knew the reason. And so we have become more modernized, and we have said, listen, this is, what are they talking about in Congress today? You know, equality between men and women? And this whole idea of equality between men and women have got into such an area where the original ideas, which were well-founded, which dealt with the welfare of a man and a woman, not how to create inequality, that when these men connect or stare into the eyes of these women that are present in the cemetery, they have made contact with the original idea of the angel of death, to which women are immune, but men do not have that system. And therefore, concludes the Zohar, men die at early ages, more times than not, it is attributed to their presence on a cemetery. Piece of information. Does that mean you can't walk with your wife on a cemetery? Of course you can. It was never an idea that we should be liberated. Women should be liberated. Women have always been liberated. But what became distorted was the ideas of how Vayakhel, to remain separated, if men are more vulnerable to the idea of the angel of death than women, then they took this precaution. So without knowing why, so they decided, the Muslims and Sephardic people of hundreds of years ago going back, decided women, because they had heard some Kabbalists give this interpretation and the reason being forgotten, and so all that remained was women should not go, and then the idea of inequality emerged and all of the other misconceptions. But the idea of how men can prevent themselves from becoming vulnerable to the angel of death is provided by the Zohar. Because this idea of Vayakhel is to impress us with the idea that when, chas v'shalom, the forces of negativity, the forces of chaos strike us, it is not some isolated occurrence. It happened. We have no idea why it happened. There is no such thing. Everything mentioned in this week's parsha, and also its antidote, the reason we're going to come here on Shabbat, is to hear this reading because Vayakhel, it will separate, not assemble as the literal translation of the word implies, but it will separate as we must do on a cemetery, as we must do at certain times if there's violence going on. Nobody should be seen outside. The walls have a consciousness of protection. Confinement is a form of protection. Sometimes, unfortunately, it's a form of isolation. What's the difference? The difference is what is contained in the walls of that confinement. Is it this, a place of a synagogue or a temple where the light force of God has become manifested? then you feel you're supposed to feel good. If you feel that you want to run out of this place as quickly as possible, then there's a good indication that the walls have also captured much of the chaotic negative forces that also lurk around. And that's why a synagogue or the tabernacle could not be commingled or intermingled. Even in the funds that were raised to create the tabernacle, there had to be that separation. We have another section here. To indicate another aspect on how our lives are affected day in and day out by forces that may seem to be unimportant or, to the best of our knowledge, it has very little influence on the effects and outcomes of our daily activities. In the Torah, it says, "Kahu meyitchem truma l'Hashem, kol nediv libo." And it says like this, "Take you from among you an offering unto the Lord," meaning everyone should contribute. And then the verse adds, seeming redundant, wants to make a contribution, wouldn't that indicate that there is a willing heart? Says the Zohar, "Bore, come and see. Bishasha Adam meisim ritzono lavodot rabono." When a person comes to fulfill his desire in sharing with God, with the Creator, ratzon hazeh olat chila al alev. This thought of what this person wants to do with his contribution comes first, of course, to his heart. Shua kiyum v'yisod shel kol haguf. The heart. The way the heart understands. The way the heart measures the activity. So shall the entire body be influenced by that action. Meaning, says the Zohar, that whatever activity, and maybe that's why, as we know, the heart seems to be the most important factor in the continuity of existence. The heart. Why? Why? What about heart transplants? What about artificial hearts? Says the Zohar that the consciousness and the behavior of an individual is impressed by how the heart reacts to the consciousness. Because the ratzon tov, if there is a good feeling in that heart, that everything around him, kol abidei haguf, all will join in, the hands, the feet, the environment, will all be and react exactly to the influence that the heart places on everything around. From this emerges the idea that when the Israelites were asked to contribute towards the tabernacle, but maybe their heart was somewhere else. Maybe they had other thoughts, maybe they didn't want to contribute, etc. They were told, if your heart is not willing, that everything that goes into this tabernacle, although it was just a contribution, if the heart is not there, if there is no intent, the person has been coerced or embarrassed into contributing. And for whatever reason, he doesn't have, doesn't want to. That, the heart, the feelings of the heart, will influence everything and anything, not only within the individual's own self-being, but everything around him. And therefore, the fact that one can contribute, and contribution doesn't mean in the way of money. When one contributes to a business, one contributes to a social relationship. If that contribution is not coming from the right place in the heart, then it is not that we're not participating. It is not the absence of our participation. Like the Zohar clearly states concerning good and evil, it is not that darkness is the absence of light, but it becomes a force, and it is a force that influences the outcomes of any activities, both within and in the environment. The same way here. If the heart is not in the place of the intent, that means there is no vayakhel, there's no unity between the consciousness, the heart, and the activity. Everything, meaning our own health, our own environment, our own social relationships, our own business, all will suffer, all will be subject, all will become vulnerable to the acts of the Dark Lord, to the act of Malach HaMavet, to the act of the agent of destruction. So in this little verse, again, we see the importance that even within our own system, my heart feels one way and my mind feels another. These are acts of chaos that have already taken place within the system. They will eat away at the system. They will eat away at the environment. They will eat away at every activity that we become involved with. And therefore cautions the Torah that to prevent chaos, to create vayakhel, to create unity, all parts of the body, all consciousness of the individual must be unified. If not, here was not the idea, don't contribute, which was the superficial idea. Cease from that kind of activity. That activity will boomerang and eat away at the individual, because the essential feature of ease is vayakhel, is when everything that is involved in any activity, whatever that activity means. And here it wasn't just the activity. The Torah was not just teaching us about a tabernacle. Now, what happens if we have our tabernacle? What happened after they had the tabernacle? You mean we could take the section out? In fact, many sages raise the question, why today do we have to read this section of the tabernacle? Are we going to build a tabernacle? Do we intend to build a tabernacle? No. Next thing on the agenda is the Holy Temple, which according to the Zohar wasn't even destroyed. Then why are we even discussing? Why are we reading? Why are we becoming involved with something that happened a long time ago and that shall never again appear? Because, says the Zohar, this is just a metaphor. It's just an idea to provide us with something tangible, something physical by which we can relate to. But it is an essential teaching on how to create unity, because it is only by the creation of unity and the divorce of fragmentation, the divorce of separation, that one can maintain uneasiness. One can maintain a unification, not only within himself, but within his entire environment. So every aspect of the tabernacle, as this lengthy Zohar goes on to, the placing of the Torah. The Torah is invalid. Is it holy? Yes. Does it serve as a mechanism? No. But it's a holy instrument? No. The structure of the ark. What happens if it had no covering? Had no doors? Nothing. The way it's structured here is to teach us that in our own synagogue, we must know how to structure and build an ark. Every aspect of this building, windows, whatever, all go into the unification and consequently the security shield that we're all looking for. But prior to any form of security, before we can even entertain methods by which we can prevent chaos from entering our lives, is the consciousness that it is not a question of being lucky or unlucky. Within our consciousness, we must become aware that there are forces out there, forces that of necessity were required because of the idea of free choice. If there weren't these evil forces outside, it would interrupt or even hinder the process of free choice, of which is the reason why we're all present in this world, to provide us with an opportunity of free will, free choice. So these forces of necessity must exist. But if we do not consider cancer as originating with a force known as cancer, a force known as Malach HaMavet, a force that is bent as the heir of Rav, who were manifested as people. There are people that come into this world who have no other function, but to create havoc in the environment, create destruction in the environment. But if we do not accept it, and I'm not here this morning to influence you, to convince you that you must accept this idea of the Zohar, that it is forces that we must deal with. It is not just, well, it happened. But if we can take the preventive measures, and you can only take preventive measures, is when you know there's an opponent out there. But if you are totally oblivious of the idea that it's not suddenly an act of God, if you remain with that impression, then you're going to be amongst those who will either be lucky or unlucky. That consciousness, from the Kabbalistic point of view, is the root of Satan. He will even use religion to tell us that when misfortune, chas v'shalom, strikes us, an act of God. And you know what? God in his mysterious ways knows why. In his mysterious, that, my friends, that exclamation is satanic. To attribute the idea that we are helpless people to a God that seems to be evil is part of satanic consciousness. And that is the singular factor, says the Zohar. That's why it's so concealed in Vayakhel, that we do not attribute evil, as many spiritual teachings refer to, as something that should and could exist with light, because evil is only the absence of light. But if we can instill within this air of Rav, within this destructive force, if we can instill within the cancer the light force of God, we shall eliminate the force of cancer. And the answer is no. The answer is no. They cannot coexist. If we can create a strong enough force of the light force of God, create enough protection around us, filled, completely embellished with the idea of the light force of God, then we shall remove from our midst. Not eternally, not until the end of days. They shall never be removed entirely. They will be separated as Vayakhel. Separate. The heir of Rav were not put to death. They are a force that are reborn and reborn over and over and over again. It is the teachings of the Zohar to provide us with this information. That the consciousness of evil is a very dominant force in our lives, unfortunately. But at the same time, we must learn the rules of how they operate and how we can prevent their becoming manifested, they becoming a part of our lives. Amen.